Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. Hope you're all doing fantastic today. So, as always, I'm your host, Coach Porrick. Today we are up on episode number 50, so it's a lovely little milestone that I've been looking forward to hitting for a good while. In today's episode, I'm joined by a fantastic lady. Her name is Sophie Conroy. Sophie is a high-performance nutritionist with both the Galway Men's GAA senior team and also the Connacht Academy rugby team. Rugby squad. She has a huge amount of knowledge when it comes to nutrition and strategies to employ for both athletes and non-athletes in how to improve our nutrition and our relationship with food. So hopefully you guys enjoy the chat today, and I'll chat to you guys very soon.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Coach Porrick from the Humble Coach Podcast. You're very welcome back to episode 50. So episode 50, I didn't think it would come for a long time. We've had little hiatuses here and there in the last while, but I'm very, very happy to be at number 50. And I've got an excellent guest, guys, today. So I really, really appreciate her coming along. So my guest today is a lady called Sophie Conroy. Sophie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Sophie, so the first thing we'll do, I suppose, is kind of have a bit of a chat about your background and what you're currently doing, and your current roles with a couple of different teams, and also how you would have kind of gotten towards that stage over the last number of years, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my main role is a performance nutritionist with the Connacht Academy here in Galway, and I also work with the Galway Senior Footballers. They're my two main teams. My background, how I got there, is I actually started in sports science in DCU, and from that moved on to a master's in sports performance science. And it was there that I realised that I wanted to go into nutrition, and from that I moved on to do the IOC, which is the International Olympic Committee diploma in sports nutrition. So I did that for a further 2 years. And throughout that I just started to work in GAA, I suppose, where I started really to get work and experience as I'm studying, because the experience is going to be invaluable. You can have all the degrees, but you need the experience.
Absolutely.
And I finished that up and then continued picking up a few different gigs, and then have in the last 8 months moved over here to start with Club.
Great stuff. So there's a couple of things I'll kind of pick up on within that. The first thing, I suppose, obviously, if you're interested in sports science, then a natural additional point to it would be the nutrition and the value and the importance of that in the whole system, really. But is there a particular reason you went towards the IOC nutrition orientation? Rather than some of the kind of more, I suppose, more general kind of ones, or at least not necessarily courses, but like certifications or nutrition systems that we would all be kind of aware of, nearly, I suppose, or a lot of people would be aware of in the fitness industry, in the health and performance industry. Is there a reason particularly for the IOC one, or to just kind of look really, really interesting?
Well, there are a few reasons for practicality as well as the actual benefits of it. First of all, it was where I was guided towards from a very good lecturer at Hadley UL.
Okay.
It was also part-time online for 2 years, so if you're trying to work and get through college, it's actually a really good beneficial way. But one of the main reasons from the quality point of view, not only is it some of the leading people in the world in sports nutrition, like Louise Burke, Ron Long, the big names you want in it. But also, when you're looking particularly within Ireland, it's sports nutrition, it's really only starting up as a profession really in the last, I suppose, 5 or 10 years. And there isn't a huge amount of courses within Ireland itself that now developing more, but when I was starting, that has the quality, I suppose, that I was looking for. Something that really needs to be considered that people don't realise is that sports, and nutrition within within Ireland isn't regulated, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a register either within Ireland. No. So I'm actually registered in the UK with an organisation called the SANR.
Okay.
And I was looking for a course that would get me on this register to be recognised, because it's not just an easy register to get on.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that brought me away from a lot of the, crossed off a lot of other courses.
Mm-hmm.
For me, and I suppose, and I didn't ever want to do just generalised nutrition, I was interested in the sports side of it.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the main aims of that, like, in that I wanted to be able to, for all the work I'm doing, I wanted to be recognised on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for people to realise that so many people who are now delivering nutrition might actually, you have to remember it isn't regulated, and you have to be very mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that anyone can say, anyone in Ireland can call themselves a nutritionist no matter what.
Yeah.
So just to be mindful of that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand the viewpoint there, and I completely agree. Like, I've done, as a simple example, I've done the precision nutrition level one, but I'm not going to call myself any kind of nutritionist. I'm aware of the basics of nutrition coaching, but that's about the height of it. Like, it's a fantastic course, don't get me wrong. But it is a straightforward enough one that is relatively simple enough to do if you have any kind of coaching level. And the difference then between the likes of the comprehensiveness of the IOC one compared to something like the precision nutrition one, it makes it's a huge difference, and a huge mental shift to really, yeah, I suppose, yeah, commit to that. But on that also, you made an extremely good point that there isn't, because of the lack of regulation, it can be quite an interesting kind of murky world of nutrition.
Absolutely.
Science.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a while, but that's an excellent kind of segue into it. Now, you're working with Galway and you're working with Connacht at the moment. Have you, this was a kind of throw a silly one out to begin with maybe, but is there any particular big challenges you find with both of those teams at the moment, nutrition-wise? Is it just because of the youth of those teams potentially that you've got some challenging habits to try and build in, or is it just the actual performance requirements require so much detailed refinement of the food types and food strategies nearly? Is there anything there in particular?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So let's start with Galway. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing to remember is that from the GA perspective, they're not professional.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to work Monday to Friday, 9-5 on average. And so they're trying to work a full-time job on top of coming and working basically as a professional athlete. That's mm-hmm. the standard that's expected. And so just from a practical point of view, to be able to have sufficient nutrition, the correct nutrition, and sleep, which is just the hit word at the moment, is so important.
Yeah.
Little things like that. But just to be able to have the time to prep their food,
mm-hmm.
or have the time to recover. If you think of sometimes GA training, I go out till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and these lads who might be based in Galway mm-hmm. itself, that might travel back, and they might be getting back to their wherever their respective homes are mm-hmm. until after midnight, and they're getting up for work at 6 or 7 in the morning. You're already compromising recovery with sleep, with the ability to eat, to get up in the morning to be prepared. So from a practicality point of view, from trying to sufficiently fuel and recover the GA players, I say that's the biggest challenge.
Okay.
I suppose the differences with the Connacht and with the academy. So the best way I like to describe the academy to people is like rugby school.
Yeah.
So we take on lads from pathway, and then they come into the sub-academy, and the aim is to progress to them to the pro level. And they're trying to balance college as well, because we mm-hmm. like to insist that they attend college. As a matter of at least sports, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it's more about getting the education into them. And if we missed, we are in rugby in Ireland throughout the IRFU, we have a very good pathway development for nutrition where we're developing their education from a young age. Mm. So generally, they come to us in decent shape to have basic knowledge versus the GAA mind.
Yeah.
But I suppose a big thing is life rugby is like getting a weight gain with them.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge. It's the quantity of food that they need is probably one of the bigger challenges. And then obviously balancing that out in college as well. That I say certain challenges that go across both of them. I think cross nutrition is probably the typical social media these days influencing people's beliefs and behaviours, and that just makes things a bit tricky because you have to take a deep breath sometimes and try to explain it in terms that they will take more trust in you versus some influencer on social media. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So they're probably the main two challenges. You could go into so many more, but
Well, that's a good that's an excellent start, because there's a couple of different parts of that we can speak about. And the I suppose going to back to the Galway one and looking at the difficulty of I suppose the and I think we all kind of know this, anybody who's interested in sports and anyone especially obviously who's interested in GA is definitely understanding of the difficulty at the moment between the semi-professional nature and almost professional, I suppose, emphasis of it rather than the actual reality of it. And like it all looks great on TV and it all looks fantastic and sounds fantastic when you're speaking about all these new very very cool people speak about all these new very cool things coming up with GAA inter-county teams, and the high profile element makes a huge difference to it. But the reality is exactly like you mentioned, there's two or three training sessions a week, probably a bit more, including gym sessions, including work, including other general life stresses, and the ability to try and recover there is extremely difficult. And that's where I suppose we can look a little bit about the preparation strategies and stuff, but that would be one of the biggest ones, I think, and you mentioned correctly there. If you're finishing work at, we'll say, are you finishing the work at 7 or 6 or something like that, and then you go straight to training, obviously you're traveling quite a lot, you come back, and you want to really have your act together. suppose physically, like strategically, you want to have a nice support group with you throughout, like your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it is. You need to have your act together. Absolutely. I think that's one of the difficult points that you might have, is trying to convince them. Now, so obviously, you're not going to have to completely convince them, because they're going to be quite sold on the concept of really, really important emphasis towards recovery and just making sure that they get enough sleep, they get enough of this, because their teammates are obviously going to be being conscious of that too. But is there any particular recommendations you have for preparing food for the likes of not necessarily inter-county players necessarily, but just high enough level GAA players or people that are players that want to really push on with their recovery and ability? And also, what kind of strategies would you talk about? Like, is it just a case of preparing food on a Saturday and or on Sunday, bulk prepping, and then just kind of living in Tupperware for the week? or is there a couple of other ways of working it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose what I come back down to is, first of all, from a practicality point of view, is it's all well and good to preach, oh, cook all your food on a Saturday, but you have to first of all look at the play as yourself, what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
If it works for you to be able to have 4 hours on the weekend to do that, absolutely, match cook some foods. Planning ahead, though, is really important. So look at what your week, if you know you have 2 days of training, do you get fed after training? Do you need food ready for that? Or knowing what sufficient little snacks you can have to have for your recovery. I have a huge, huge emphasis on recovery. It's my, the lads are probably sick of me going on about it. But like, I really believe you're only as good as your last session.
Yeah.
So if you're going out to boost yourself to do a session and then you're just not recovering from it, you're not going to be capable of the next session. So, really looking at the meal, at your meals, your snacks ahead of time in order to emphasize the main points of recovery. So you look at what you need to recover. You need your protein to repair your muscles. You need your carbohydrates to resynthesize all your glycogen lost in your muscles. You need your hydration, something that's just totally forgotten about. That's not a difficult thing to actually do once you're conscious about it. And you need your sleep. So I really feel if you can hit those things and then you look at what is the best way from your lifestyle that you can hit those ways. If it is popping into the petrol station on the way home, you have a half an hour drive home, and getting a pint of milk to start your recovery process, would that work for you? And then you're ready made meal there at home. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It comes down to, I always feel it comes down to, like, I feel people set themselves up for failure if they try to do unrealistic things that doesn't fit into their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that goes from the top elite sport to the average person trying to just eat healthier or eat to lose a few pounds. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
No, they're fantastic points, and I think that's one of the biggest things that I suppose we get very wound up in all the, you'll obviously be quite aware of this within the likes of the GA camp and, or the Galway camp, and like I'm not aware of a lot of the details of it, of course, but you would have to be working alongside obviously the sports scientists within that, or the actual the coaching staff as well, and just trying to mesh correctly the level of, I suppose, of pressure on the players, and trying to make sure that it's not too heavy duty, and you're not trying to be too much of an arse to them and stuff like that, but you're also trying to be quite supportive and quite helpful to them. So I think that makes a huge difference. Is if the whole crew are going in the same direction, obviously you're going to make a huge amount of progress. But like you mentioned, it's keeping things quite straightforward. If you need to get a pint of milk, then perfectly fine. Like, and it instead of overthinking and adding more and more stress to the system, when it could be a straightforward enough, like, okay, we'll just plan your snacks a bit. Like, make sure you bring a few pieces of fruit, or make sure you bring this. Like, and I think that's where there sometimes can be an unrealistic picture nearly from the media of the players being these unbelievable superheroes who have everything kind of catered for and they're completely organized, and I don't know if that would be the most realistic scenario ever.
No, not so much.
definitely no. Not. So we'll speak a little bit now about the other end of it, though, potentially now. So for non-athletes, now, obviously you're working with athletes on a very regular basis, but within, we'd say, the likes of the academy situation there, where you would have gotten, like, the younger age groups would be a little bit more prepared, maybe because of the quality of the pathway that rugby would have in Ireland at the moment. But is there any particular challenges you find with the kind of younger Gaelic players? Is that because they're not maybe as developed physically, and you're getting them at a later age, and you're getting them with more ingrained habits of a difficult kind of a nature? And do you see any scope for better pathways within the GEA, or is that an unrealistic situation to kind of look at, do you think?
No, I don't think it's unrealistic. If you don't think of it, it will never happen. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it will be, when I see the differences, I think it will be fantastic to get some sort of pathway like that in place, because I have the likes of my senior GEA players now, mm-hmm. and they know less than some of my younger players because they haven't developed it, whereas now the younger players are starting to develop it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that if we get our senior players that they know the basics, that we're not educating them what a carbohydrate, what protein is and why they're important, then we can actually emphasize more on our actual performance day to day, at least nutrition. So the idea of creating a pathway, I think, would be absolutely fantastic, and from a health perspective, just from kids enjoying the sport and being able to understand what's good for them and what's not good for them. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
even that goes to public health, how we can benefit kids, and we know how much obesity is an epidemic these days.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand that, like, what I would love to see is some sort of pathway actually being developed, like, suppose the way the IRFU has it, that we're going to have a top, start to get kids at 14, 15 years of age, and by the time we get them to minor level, by the time we get them to the 20s, that they can start ticking other boxes. Do you know what I mean? That we concentrate on other things. I do a bit of work with the 20s as well now, with Galway as well, and my real emphasis now that I want to try to get them by the time they get up to us, that I don't have this situation where I'm trying to educate them about the basics. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I think it, like, I can firsthand see working in both the difference between benefits of the kids in the IRFU pathway versus the kid, like kids maybe in the GA pathway. And even I'd say in the academy, if we get players that mightn't come through the pathway because they might, we may have taken them in from in the UK or abroad and they haven't had that, you can even see how much our own players who've come through the pathway, how much higher level of just basic nutrition understanding they have. And that has a knock-on effect in that they know how to recover effectively. They're going to have better gains within a given period, like pre-season or anything, and you're not trying, they're not a step behind. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest challenge we're going to be, I think we're encountering nearly at the moment, obviously, and over the next 5 to 10 years, is trying to build, like, obviously, you're acutely aware of the whole challenge with the championship potentially changing and two tiers and things like this. But a lot of the time, the underage formats can be, not necessarily disregarded, but there's almost a separate world because it's so far away. Like, it's like a World Cup kind of mentality for the championship.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Everybody else is like, well, we kind of, hopefully the clubs will fix it kind of thing, you know, which is a really difficult situation to be in. But with that, do you have any very, I suppose, and we kind of make it very straightforward, I'll bring it back to more basics nearly. For non-athletes or weekend warriors to a small extent, is there any big takeaways you would have from, you're not going to obviously have the same strategies as the GA or the Content Academy potentially, but is there any really big takeaways that you think that normal people or normal Joe Soaps and Josephine Soaps can can take back and like look at, how can I improve my food preparation for the week? How can I make sure that I'm actually feeling nearly like a semi-pro kind of an athlete in my approach, in my approach to nutrition?
I always bring in mind that it comes to looking at your week ahead and the preparations, but keep it. I just think things are so overcomplicated these days with words being thrown out, superfood, this is superfood every day, and this is the new hit thing. And it's very hard with social media and advertising and everything. But if you're just a weekend warrior and going to gut yourself at the weekend, you still need to recover effectively. So if you're like, if you're going to have go and do a 15, 20K run or cycle or whatever, and then go straight out for a few pints, it's probably not the best strategy. But eating like you would for, like, to recover effectively, and then looking at your Monday to Friday, are you going to exercise those days? Do you need to do your food prep? Or even if you're working in office, and I'm a really realistic, practical person in that I'm never going to say, oh, well, you need to cook everything and have everything ready. Look at your local area. Is there a place you can get a healthy salad pickup for lunch, and that could be what you have, or is that what you need, or your healthy options, or is there a petrol station that has the snacks effective that you might need before you're going, if you're going straight to the gym, and if you haven't had time to do it, look around at the problem. Like, I always think coaching and nutrition is just creative problem solving. Do you know yourself?
Absolutely.
And as well as yourself, like as a coach or a nutritionist, helping people find what works for them, it's really important to remember that nutrition these days, I think, is treated too much as a blanket approach, and that's where it's so wrong. It's an individual approach. Everyone has different barriers to work within. Everyone has different obstacles and all that. So it's what suits a person. and what works into the type of training they're doing. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, and I totally agree. I think that's where it very much is a case of the simple and straightforward strategies. Like, I wouldn't be the biggest now for food prep and things like that, but my girlfriend now would be very on the ball with that. Like, it's quite simple, and it would be somewhat, I suppose, very much look like kind of boring food sometimes, but it does the job. It's fish, it's veg, it's a bit of rice.
Yeah. it's only to me having this weird, exactly. Like, I don't know, weird berry chicken product. I have some food I've never even heard of. People talk to me, you're meant to know all these super trainers or something.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that.
Exactly. But this is the crux of the next point, really, I think, and the next kind of question for you. And I wouldn't be the most social media, not that I wouldn't be the most social media savvy. I think I'm nearly just a bit shy sometimes with it, which is obviously not the greatest thing for someone who wants to try and promote and all this kind of crap. But I suppose as a full-time coach myself, I am focused on just getting the people that I work with better all the time. So I coach a lot of hours a week, and I'm just in, I suppose, at the coalface quite regularly within that. Not necessarily in nutrition, but in physical activity, absolutely. And the same with yourself, you're in it quite detailed. So we might have a different idea and a different awareness of the difficulties that social media is bringing to our door and to people's door, and the amount of mixed messages they're getting when it comes to what the hell to actually eat. And what kind of way to eat it, nearly, like, as in, we'll say like you mentioned earlier on about some of the higher level nutrition people that you would have been working with in the IOC qualification, but they might not be the most well known in general circles, let's put it that way, compared to the likes of some interesting influencers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And I was only actually speaking to Owen Feeney in my last podcast, and he's a physical a therapist, and he was at Wellfest and stuff like that, and I've been to Wellfest before, and I have great time for a lot of those type of things in theory, and in reality there are just nice interesting little events to kind of go for, and obviously they're going to be overloaded with promotional messages and advertising and the whole app. But I do think sometimes it can be, if you're a little bit copped on at all, you can realize, hang on, after a couple of these events, there's not a huge amount of new stuff going on, and they're saying the same kind of thing pretty regularly. And I don't know, is it because, do we need those kind of events and those kind of things to make sure that we can reinforce the positivity, or are they just getting to the point now where it's like, okay, look, they're 10 a penny now, and they're not that productive. I don't know if you have any thoughts on those in particular, or am I just going off on one, really?
No, like, I think it's funny, I think there's a shift in what people kind of like to do as their hobbies in the past few years, and that people like to go to the gym, it's a social thing, at a brunch on a Saturday morning, that kind of fits in with mm-hmm. their, you know, going to a fest. So if an event, it's great to go to. But like you said, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. Like, this is where I think nutrition gets a bit mixed up in the web as well, and the same with health, like all the health fitness industry, and that, like, people think there's a new big hit thing or something is going to make them drop the 10 pounds. But in the end of the day, and even in research, we nearly always come back, and it is the same principles that, for most theories, and unless we're proved otherwise, research might show that. But I think regarding like the social media, I just think it's such a grey area because it can be so positive, and there is some really good positive people out there who know what they're talking about and just want to do good for the industry, and then there's probably don't really know what they talk about as much, and borderline saying things that they really shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. And where I find that most negative is from the people you're influencing. And I'd be always very conscious of young people and the likes of what you're teaching them, or anything that's affecting body image or mental health capacity in that sense. And that's, I suppose, the areas of whatever is about my life coming in the red things, I've no issue telling them where to go and putting them straight.
Yeah.
They're able to take that, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But other people don't have someone to set them straight.
Mm.
And then I think people who are in a position where they may be an influencer have a responsibility to be mature and responsible for the messages they're conveying to us. Because I don't think it's right to promote a product that you don't understand anything about, or you don't understand the the underlying mechanisms of the body, of how it works in the body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's right to be honest. I might be wrong. Some people might totally disagree with me, but I think you're influencing other people's behaviours.
I think that's an interesting one. Like the difficulty, I suppose, within the nutrition area on social media, essentially. And I wouldn't just say like it's only Instagram or it's only this, but it's the not necessarily a disconnect, but it can be quite difficult for we'll say someone like yourself who would be quite research based and quite. And quite very well educated on the actual facts of the matter, like as in you know the deal with this, like it's not just kind of airy fairy, like, well, I saw a post one day and that influenced my next 3 weeks of eating, kind of thing, you know what I mean? Because I started doing detox tea or whatever the hell it is. But the difficulty, I think, for all of us, and like you mentioned, from coaches to nutrition educators, etc., is helping normal people to connect with the actual research based type of elements and then the realities of applying those in their lives. Because I think sometimes it can be like, okay, well, look, I'm not really going to go sitting reading research papers that are telling me exactly what the crack is here. They need that distilled in a better way. And that's where I think sometimes I would say it's quite an interesting time in social media, because like you mentioned, a lot of people who are very positive and very open-minded about that. The challenge is really for all of us to try and distill that stuff correctly so that people can digest it correctly, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It's difficult.
It's like, I totally agree. It's all well. I think it's all well and good that people in research, and I've got research background, obviously, but it's all well and good to say you know exactly what the most protein can stimulate X, Y, and Z reactions to the body. But you say that to an average person, you say that to one of the kids, you say that to any Jozo, that means absolutely nothing to them. Mm-hmm. So this is where experience, I think, like I would say, when I first left college, I was very naive, just wanted to show off my knowledge.
Yeah.
And this is where experience, and if your knowledge of experience, like, oh, wait, people don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? It means, oh, just try to include a pint of milk or chicken breast.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And that's, I suppose, where the gaps and bridges can be bridged. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely, yeah.
I just think, I agree, like, and sometimes social media from the people that aren't research-based can show that really well. So there's positives on that side as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's having an appreciation. People need to, like,
mm-hmm.
you always have to have appreciation for what you don't understand.
Yeah.
I suppose. And I think if people can appreciate that, I don't have an issue with that. And they're not trying to step on anyone's toes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm just thinking of an interesting example of that. And it's one that's just resonated with me. And I suppose, I've as a CrossFit coach primarily, and irrelevant of how controversial CrossFit is in the general scheme of things, I'm a firm believer in its effectiveness done correctly and coached correctly and added in as a general part of your lifestyle correctly done. But I don't know, like, and I'm not sure of your awareness of it, but the CrossFit.com has changed recently. So the whole kind of main structure of the headquarters has changed. But one of the nicest things that I've found has been that there's been a big emphasis towards just general health and the older population. But on their main website, they have the most beautiful food and nutrition videos at the moment, and they're so straightforward. They're just like, they're set to classical music, they're really nicely well shot, but they're also like chicken curry or this, like, they're so straightforward, it's hilarious to actually watch. But I think things like that might be actually the way to kind of go to really educate people on how to do it.
I think as well, like, from if you're looking at from whether the general public to an elite athlete, is that one of the biggest downfall is usually consistency, to be able to continually live or eat or train a certain way. I think one of the big supports to be able to develop that consistency is that it to be not overcomplicated, that they, like, you look at these people that they're told to go out and buy a shopping list of strange greens they've never heard. Whereas you, to make it simple for a person, to something they would stick to, it's like a simple chicken curry. And that's something that is, in the long term, if they can just be able to keep with their simple foods, they're going to be more likely to succeed because they can maintain a consistency.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest difficulties, though, is sometimes at the moment, and I think it's maybe I don't dig as deep as I should into nutrition or into where to really go for good nutrition advice on social media. And a lot of people will go there. Now, not necessarily myself. I'm not going to head onto Instagram and go, right, hashtag nutrition, hashtag keto, and just kind of go searching. I don't know if an awful lot of people do, but I think some people do actually kind of go that route, or at least inadvertently that's going to be on their newsfeed more and more if they see this kind of stuff, if they do look down a particular road, and it'll start popping up a lot more. It's going to start becoming coming into their psyche a little bit more, and they may be becoming more and more conscious because of that. And I think that's the difficulty. Is, do you have any particular people that you actually quite like on social media that are doing a lot of interesting work and positive work? And it might only be a couple of people, but that might be a nice helpful rabbit hole for people to go down, because they're obviously going to have other good influences along with them. Is there anybody you like these days in particular?
Like, I keep an eye on social media. I don't rely on it so much, because me, I get you. It's not enough hours in the day. I don't know how people do it. Because you need a full-time job. I just don't understand. I kind of follow a few researchers, and like, if you've obviously heard Sigma Nutrition, I would be an avid listener to that. But then there'd be some other, I follow the Good Health Doctor. I think they're very good for regarding good health. But if I'm flicking through, I suppose the best advice I can give you is, in the person's description, are they just a person who takes an interest? Do they have any qualifications? Like, are they a registered dietitian or nutritionist? Looking for those kind of qualities, because you'll know within a second or two of looking at it whether it's very practical and very research based. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But there are some really great people out there who are really good at bringing the research to the platform. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No. I totally.
That's kind of what I look for when I'm looking at different people, and you'll know fairly quick from looking at someone's page what kind of they're about.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is that for anybody who is a coach or is a nutrition educator, that the real focus should be on distilling those different pieces down to whatever I think a lot of us as coaches maybe, and like you mentioned, you wanted to originally, when you left college, you were like, I want to just tell everybody what the crack is, and I know I'm going by the book. And we know now, and I'm coaching for years at this stage, and I'm like, hang on. It's like you mentioned, exactly. It's just creative problem solving on the day at the particular time, meeting the person where they're at. And it's some of those kind of things are going to resonate, like the likes of Danny and Sigma and stuff like that. Like, they're fantastic resources, really, really, really amazing stuff. But it's still, it can be kind of difficult. They're improving it a lot, because they are still distilling, they're improving their distillation of the details down to a more regular person's kind of viewpoint, but still having that nice attachment of research, so there's that nice consistency involved with it. But I think it still has a bit of way to go, because it can almost feel, I don't know, it's a, I think the biggest challenge we have,
it's
science-y,
like, yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it.
Say again?
It's science-y, like, there is still a very heavy emphasis, which is no bother.
Yeah.
But I think for the average person who just takes an interest in nutrition, it's probably a lot from the podcast, but probably a bit full on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I listen to some of them sometimes, I need to research a word.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So,
I think that's the challenge we might have at the moment, though, is that we need... We nearly need really cool people who are in nutrition or are in coaching, as in like actual personalities, almost to a small extent, I think. I don't know, it's a strange one, that are able to both combine that or also nearly make the science cool.
Yeah.
And that's I think the biggest challenge for all of us, because we, yeah, even as a fitness coach, I need to try and make that as cool as possible. And if it's something like a simple aerobic, it's like, no doubt you'll know the crack with the academy and the Galway lads. Like, if there's just shuttle runs, like, the shuttle runs are shuttle runs. Like, you can't really overcomplicate those too much.
No.
But there is the temptation to kind of go, okay, well, we could pull the research out here now and be like, right, this is exactly what kind of I'm going to do for Maz running on this and this. And most players and most people are like, right, thanks. No need for that too much.
And all your work is just gone then.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the biggest thing we can do, and like you mentioned earlier on, is just finding out where people are at and then meeting them with whatever they need within that kind of a framework.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes, like, even what we really try to do is put, like, a full approach on nutrition. So, like, within particularly within the academy, whether you have like a MasterChef challenge that you set up, like you yourself, like, I might be, these are the points from a researcher, like from what I want to achieve in order for them to be able to ensure that they're getting recovery. Mm-hmm. And they're just told, you need to prepare a meal that has X, Y, and Z, and without them knowing, they're kind of developing those skills. They come dine with me, or a ready, steady cook, or a master chef, or something fun like that. Or we've had a bake off for healthy treats. Do you know what I mean? So thinking outside the box, kind of, it's real innovative thinking sometimes. But it is, I think, particularly I find with our kind of Generation Z, I think they call it now, or something, is danger flow, like on their phones all the time. So even thinking outside the box, like, I've private Instagram pages to even try to, like, reach them in that sense, that part of this, so we can put up recipes, put cool tips, and it's really trying to know your target audience as well, that, you know what I mean?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, like, I like a lot of those ideas, the MasterChef ideas, and I think that's an interesting one, because I think, and I won't keep you very, very much longer now, Sophie, I know you're busy out, but there's a couple of things bubbling up in my head now regarding that. Like the likes of MasterChef, for example, it's a really interesting program, really kind of fun to watch. But the gamification of those type of things can be really, really helpful in building positivity towards your interaction with food and with training. And I think, and go back to the kind of CrossFit stuff, and CrossFit essentially is just the gamification of fitness to a small extent. And it doesn't mean that we're getting rid of any of the actual basic principles of fitness. It just means that we're just gamifying them a little bit more to make them more interesting and more palatable, really, than anything else. But the same with nutrition. I like that. I suppose for yourself within the likes of the Galway team and the Galway setup and the Connacht setup, have you had any pushback to those type of innovative approaches, or has it been really, really welcomed with open arms and just been really interested in over the last while?
Yeah, no, it's very much open arms, kind of, like, if you want to do something. I suppose within the GA, the biggest issue is getting the time to do, like I said, particularly with the seniors, it's like they're working full time jobs. When do you do it sometimes?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the biggest practicality. And then you have to kind of problem solve, like, well, if I can't, you're kind of looking at you have to be really good organized plan first, looking at your season ahead and looking at the time slots. Like, April has been a very much so it's like, okay, well, that's a development window, not just from an S&D point of view, but from my point of view, from nutrition, I can get that education in. But they're very good, like, they do welcome you. And I suppose the biggest thing for anyone who might be going down the nutritional path is something I was naive at the start with, is creating the buy-in from players and staff and everything. Because without that, you don't have a foot to stand on. So to create that buy-in, and that buy-in comes from you as a practitioner being showing that what you're capable of, and then like that, making it more interesting and a bit fun for them. And then just, I think something that sometimes, particularly in the nutrition, because it's a bit like come and go. And some people within teams that they aren't really based there all the time, but the importance of, like, building relationships with, you're probably the same with your clients. Building relationships with your athletes is just, or your clients who work with, or like, just the weekend warriors is called them as well. But that's so integral as well, because they have trust in you. But even that, if you really want to help someone develop their nutrition skills, and if you don't know anything about them or what their challenge is from day to day, or have trust, you're on the back foot already. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that segues nicely in towards my kind of final question to you. And you mentioned this earlier on, and the impact that we can all have, and especially as educators, have on the younger kind of population and the up and coming population. But I think also as adults, and as and we are obviously very acutely aware of it as well, more and more the older population might have quite a difficult relationship with food, and trying to throw off the shackles of their past and the habits that they would have really built over many, many years that are really difficult to kind of get rid of. And there's a lot of housework to be done to tidy that, to get over those, a lot of wallpapering to be done to get rid of those habits, if that makes sense. Because we can't really get rid of those habits. We just have to make sure that we build new ones and more stable ones on top of those.
Absolutely.
Do you have any particular recommendations for how we, I suppose we kind of go in a couple of ways, how us as adults and maybe the older population can improve our relationship with food, but also then how we can influence the younger population and how to keep them kind of on the straight and narrow nearly, when it comes to just the more straightforward stuff that they will need for their athletic career or their work career or whatever it is, or just making sure that by the time they get to 25 or 30, they're not on the very difficult end of the situation. They're on a more positive kind of an uptick. Is there any particular ways you like to recommend to improve the relationship with food?
Well,
like,
I suppose if you're trying to change or bring in new habits, this goes back to sometimes people just take on too much at once. I would always, with anyone, say change one thing at a time. What's the biggest thing that will make, what's the greatest change that will make the greatest impact here that is attainable to do? And once you do that, make sure you master that first before you move on to take another one. So that could be, let's say, at the start of a month, you list out three things that you feel, for instance, are inhibiting you to lose some fat mass that you might lose. It could be that you're eating biscuits, too many biscuits after tea time. And it could be that you're poor for eating breakfast and means you're gorging by lunchtime. So simply taking one task, so okay, for 7 to 14 days now, I'm going to have one little treat, one biscuit with my cup of tea in the evening. And then once you've mastered that, take on a new habit and then build on them, as opposed to trying to say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and then you're just setting yourself up for failure. I think, and then through creating those habits, I think then you're going to, if you have kids or anything, you're going to positively influence their choices when they see you with positive nutritional behaviors, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think another point is that so many adults, myself included, we have a predisposition to hate certain foods. I would be really careful not to hate certain foods in front of kids sometimes, because that's just going to rub off. And I can be the first to put my hand up, like, I will not eat bananas because my father did not eat bananas. The only reason I don't eat bananas is like, so if you're really trying to positively influence younger people's behaviours, think of your own behaviours before you start preaching their behaviours. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm a fan of bananas myself.
I know, People can't believe you're a nutritionist with bananas. I don't like green tea either.
You don't like green tea?
No, apparently as a nutritionist you're meant to like green tea.
I don't know, I'm kind of hit and miss on green tea sometimes, I have to say. I quite like a good normal coffee, to be honest.
I'm just an Americana person myself, yeah.
But I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there. Like you mentioned, it's very much a case of the ability to form really good positive habits. And even, like you mentioned there towards the back end of it, our own, it's not even necessarily actual nutrition habits, it's mentality habits towards how we approach our conversations about nutrition to other people. So, like, giving ourselves a couple of seconds to stop and think, okay, well, do I actually need to start talking about all of these kind of extra details? I've no doubt within the likes of the GOE team and the Connex Academy, you'll want to, I don't know if you're an awful lot different than me, but I want to tell everybody everything about coaching and training and all of this. And you probably do the same yourself. You want to educate a huge amount about nutrition.
You spend enough time studying it.
Oh yeah, you're mad to just like go mad, go full tilt on it. But you really have to be quite careful with that. Like, the approach to an individual person has to be quite different on the basis of where they're at, be it in a recovery situation, or if, like you mentioned, a contentious enough kind of a challenging one would be that if they're in an academy and they're a quite light player, they have to improve their body mass in general a little bit, or their muscle mass, and they have to put on a bit of weight, because otherwise I don't know, it's nearly a difficult one. You want them to get a bit heavier, but to stay safer nearly. In that kind of context, because they're in a contact sport. They have, irrelevant of what level of care and safety you put in, it's still a collision sport, extremely difficult, not the easiest one in the world. And they're going into battle every week, so they have no choice but to try and make sure that you're being conscious of that. But I'd say that's one of the challenges then, is that person's relationship with food may be different a few years down the road, because they may have had to push a little bit further in the calories, and their body then is a little bit more used to it if they've done that a few different times. So it can be a tough one to balance, I've no doubt, depending on the person and on the team that you would be dealing with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I totally agree. And then I suppose on that point is that what's really important is, if we're looking at developing nutrition knowledge from a young age, that, like, the hope would be that when a rugby player retires, that they understand the reason they've been eating that volume of food and how to adjust it, that they don't just continue eating that volume of food when they don't need it.
Yeah.
So I suppose you're looking at intermittent eating from a young age, of understanding nutrition basics. Is so important throughout life. It's madness that it's actually not more incorporated in schools, I think, than that.
Yeah.
It's a cornerstone of majority of our health problems in society, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's actually, I might leave it on this kind of point. I know I'm not sure if it's necessarily a negative point, but it's definitely, it's an interesting one to get some thought experiments around. What you would do, because you're obviously coaching all the time and nutrition coaching all the time within all of these areas, but you do some workshops also, and do you, how important do you think those kind of things are, that kind of, not necessarily sporadic education, but would it have to be a case of like a nutrition actual workshop in a club every week kind of thing nearly, or part of the education of the club, be even at a younger age, would it nearly be a case of like you actually do 10 minutes, like a simple example would be an under 14s team or something like that, Is there any benefit to adding in 10 or 15 minutes worth of nutrition education along with the training there? Or is that the only way to do it? Or is there is there better ways like those nearly standalone nutrition workshops, and then the actual coaches will relay that onto the participants themselves?
I don't think the only way to do it. I think it would be great if clubs were to incorporate. I don't think it would need to be done on a weekly basis. Regular kind of, like I think this once-off nutrition talk, never see a group again. I think it's a bit old school at this stage.
Yeah.
I think modern nutrition need constant support. And I just think from the age point of view, I think they have just such a window of opportunity at that age. That's why it's important.
Yeah.
For growth and maturation and health. And you're also developing a healthy relationship with food. It goes beyond the physical development of it. I think, like, even if you are in a club, it doesn't necessarily have to be a full-on workshop, but creating the ethos in the club around health and nutrition. So whether that's if they have events on the food you supply or tea and biscuits, that you're looking at healthier options, looking at smoothies maybe, that you have signage around the club or pictures of snacks to recover, snacks to have before training, or when you're, do you know what I mean? Pictures of getting your rainbow fruit veg. Like that, just outside the box thinking. So you're creating an ethos around the club that this is what we believe in this club, that nutrition is important, and these are snippets of education, and that be recipes, whether they try to incorporate nutrition within, like those family days type thing that you have, everyone brings a pot of food, mom's teams bring pot of food, or they do healthy bakes, really outside the list of end of the things you can do. But I think it's creating the right belief within a club and supporting that through some workshops. I don't think every, but then I think it's so important as coaches, whether it's yourself or then coaches down to another 12, another 14 situation. I think they have a responsibility to have some sort of basic idea of what people need, of what kids need in order to relax.
Absolutely. Very much. I think that's the biggest challenge that most, be it clubs or educators will have, is you mentioned earlier on, it's getting that buy-in from all of the parents. I suppose a simple example would be I spent about 9 months in the States in 2007 coaching underage soccer, primarily girls soccer, kind of from mid to 9 years old to like 17 or 18 years old odd, and across a number of different teams. And like you mentioned, the whole potluck mentality was actually fantastic. Like, there would be, after games, there would be a huge amount of really good food. There'd be some pizza, fine, but mostly there'd be quite good food afterwards. And it was really interesting to see that. But I think that's where there was a focus. No, more and more now, I think, definitely. There's a better focus because for our age groups, and like you mentioned, Generation Z, we are now starting to take over those kind of clubs and those kind of environments. And we have the most ability to dictate the progress and the change of direction within that. So it's up to us, Stefan, to try and tilt that in the right direction. I think you're absolutely right. Sophie, it's been fantastic to talk to you. I really, really appreciate you coming on. Have you any particular areas that you like people to get in touch with you if they wanted to work along with you or anything like that? Or are you just kind of happy to be open to a chat potentially? I know you're a very, very busy lady, so it might be tight to get you for a chat.
I suppose if anyone wants to ever contact me, I'm open to that. Through my email, they can reach me at sophie.conroy@connectrugby.ie, I think. Or I'm always good, like, I don't usually do a lot of social media, but my Instagram, which is, I think it's just Sophie Conroy.
No problem.
Even if they want to, anyone ever wants to DM me, I get a few clients off that, people question, but usually that's the best way to contact me. I'm not a big, you wouldn't find me on any huge Twitter space or anything like that.
No problem, no worries. That's okay. And a final question. What have you any particular interesting projects coming up? I know obviously you're very busy with the Connacht Academy and with the Galway team, and hopefully they'll go well. I'm a Mayo man now, mind, so I can't wish them that well.
Yeah, well, they're not in the final this weekend.
That's true. But have you any particular big plans yourself, or any kind of areas you'd like to delve into in the next few years, or anything like that that you're looking forward towards?
In the future for me, I'd always have a PhD in the back of my head.
Okay.
But I think that's another day's thought. I would love if there was something in Ireland set up in that kind of GA pathway.
Yeah.
For youth, I'd love to be, if there was, I'd love to get something. That's not something I'm in the line for at all.
No.
But I'd love to get involved in something like that. At the moment, my main projects are literally up to my eyes at the summer now, because it's the busiest time of year with GAA, and we go into pre-season within Connacht, and that's actually our most important time of the year. Nice. So there's a huge, huge amount of work that goes into that. So that's my main project at the moment. I know it sounds so interesting, but that's about it.
No, I think I think so. Like I'm the same as a coach or as a nutrition educator yourself. We always think that it's not that interesting, but most non people are probably like, oh my god, that's so interesting, that's really class. And they're like, it's a pain in the ass, but it's important. It is cool. It is really cool, but it's just really annoying sometimes because it's a lot of work.
I think people underestimate the volume of, they see like the outside or something, and they don't understand
the background,
the volume of work that goes, even if it's just a supportive infographic that develops that really, really complicated research into something really practical, the 9 hours or something to go into something like that.
I think it's always the way. Either we're overthinking it or they're underthinking it. It's always going to be the battle. Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on, Sophie. It's been a great to chat, and I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Some really, really nice insights there, and I think a lot of good tips for people, to both educators and normal people who are just wanting to get a little bit better on their nutrition and their lifestyle in general. Can use, and I know I'm going to steal a couple of those tips and try and implement them where I can also. So thanks a million for joining me, Sophie, and I hope you have a fantastic day. No worries at all.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 50 of the Humble Coach Podcast. First of all, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Sophie for taking the time today to join me for the chat. I've no doubt you guys got as much as I did from the conversation, and there's a lot of really nice, interesting nutrition insights that we got from Sophie there today. So I'm looking forward to putting those into practice myself, no doubt the same as yourselves. And secondly, I'd like to say a massive thank you to everybody who's supported the podcast over the last couple of years. It's been a hugely encouraging journey and a challenging one, but I'm looking forward to continuing it on long into the future, and I appreciate all of your support as always. I hope you guys have a fantastic day, and I'll chat to you guys very soon.